Today's program is brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. Did you know that Wisconsin leads the nation in the production of specialty cheeses, accounting for 47% of the total? To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network, broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
Oh, I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Eat Your Words on Heritage Radio Network, and I'm your host, Kathy Irway. So it is almost spring here in Brooklyn, save for another nor'easter that's apparently headed our way. But in between these sudden bursts of snow and sleet and wind, I have been seeing some buds popping out here and there. So it's a good sign that, you know, spring, and with that, a new season of produce is on its way. And with that, CSA season, a blooming, you know, colorful farmer's market to shop at. So it is the perfect time to welcome Alana Ternilla back on air. Hi.
Hello. I'm so happy to be back.
Thanks so much for joining us. And Alana is the author of The Homemade Pantry and The Homemade Kitchen, which we had on the show, where we talked about on the show.
A few years back.
3 years ago. Yeah. But so Alana's new book is called Eating from the Ground Up. And I love your style, Alana.
Oh, thank you.
You are a champion of eating simple, local, just healthful, simple vegetables and making amazing things with them, like in the homemade pantry and the homemade kitchen to use throughout the year. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So, okay, let's dive right into what eating from the ground up is all about. On the cover, there is radishes.
Mm-hmm.
You start roasted radishes in a wonderful-looking herby sauce.
Yeah, that's like a feta mint, lovely, salty thing.
Right,
yeah.
So it's like a pastel green, nice and simple sauce. You start the introduction talking about radishes and how you worked at your local farmer's market for many years, and people would always ask about what to do with radishes.
Yeah, radishes are terrifying for people, apparently. And I can understand. They're sort of bitter and spicy.
Right.
And I think, you know, it's amazing how we eat the vegetables that we eat in our lives, or like whatever our parents fed us. And then we don't ever touch the other ones.
Mm-hmm.
And so often the farmer's market is one of those opportunities for people to have experience with new vegetables, but often they need some help. And that was kind of, I started working at the farmer's market now 10 years ago or so. And I found that the thing that I loved most about it was that I could be that help. And I was sort of learning along with them.
So that's a big job.
Yeah, but it was like, it was so inspiring to be able to say, you know, you could see they were going towards that familiar, like, butterhead lettuce. And then it was like, they'd sort of hang out over by the fennel. And you're like, you know, I'd be like, have you tried fennel? Like,
yeah.
Let me talk to you about it.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you know, that was really the beginning of my food writing career. I was working at the market and I was loving that conversation. And I was also, I was in my late 20s and I was totally lost in terms of what I was going to do with my life. And I was, and I was doing all these other little jobs, but I was doing this work at the farmer's market, and I was having a drink with a friend explaining my dilemma. And she was like, you should start a blog. You should, you should start talking about recipes. And in the 5 minutes between that conversation and when I got home, I came up with the idea to call it Eating from the Ground Up. And I started it that night.
Oh my gosh.
And it took this long for that idea to become a book.
This book.
But it's really the heart of what got me started.
Right.
It's just this, what to do with a radish.
What to do with a radish. And I think that it's a really great question because, you know, a lot of people would eat it just very, really simply, like just fresh.
Sure.
And just bite it.
And it's delicious.
Or I feel like there's not a lot of middle ground. Like the other alternatives people might think of is really chefy, kind of like high-minded, like gourmet preparations.
Yeah. That happens so often with vegetables.
Right, right. With many vegetables. So you offer this really great common ground. And I wish I had a farmer's market attendant who could offer me that, because I had on the other end of that, you know, shopping experience, I was that customer who was like, okay, I'm going to figure this out on my own. And
it's scary.
Yeah. But you know, that kind of, you kind of really prove that sometimes what you really just need is a person to person anecdote about how to cook something.
Yeah. And I feel like that's really how things, you know, how I learned. Mm-hmm. And it's true. And now, and it was amazing how, especially when I would develop relationships with people at the market, they would come back to me and tell me, like, I did this. And then I also did this.
Wait, let me try it. Yeah.
Yeah. And it was, you know, that's where a lot of these recipes came from. And I just think people try to complicate things when it comes to vegetables. They hide them in things, or they turn them into something else, or they bake them into things.
Overcomplicate them.
Yeah. They're so good, though.
Or undercomplicate them, exactly. I say. So, I would say that, you know, it's rare to see a book like yours, because, you know, you came through this not as a chef.
No.
But, you know, your book and your blog really speak for, you know, your kind of philosophy here. So
yeah, I'm definitely a home cook.
Too many.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and I think, you know, there are actually so many great vegetable books out right now. Mm-hmm. I think vegetables are totally having a moment, and mm-hmm. I love that. But I have, I feel like, you know, I love a good chefy vegetable recipe, or I'm curious to see how people can turn vegetables into rice or noodles or whatever. But it's like the recipes that I think really make a difference are, you know, it's Wednesday night and you have a head of broccoli. Like, what are you going to do with it right now mm-hmm. for dinner? And so that's what I was trying to capture with this book.
Yeah, you write in the introduction that, you know, yes, you can hide vegetables into a smoothie or hide them in the form of a noodle, right?
Yep.
Or zoodle.
Or zoodle.
Okay. You know that. But, you know, you wanted to spotlight the vegetables when they're just prepared sort of well.
Yeah.
Do you think that a zoodle is not the best way to highlight a zucchini?
You know, I don't want to speak poorly of anyone's preference on how to prepare zucchini, but zoodles is not the way I do it, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, I feel like I like a good noodle myself.
Yeah.
So.
and you know, it's not all about just needing to eat more vegetables. It's really about enjoying the vegetables is what you're trying to
say. It's all about
the
pleasure, for sure.
Right. Because your book is not strictly vegetarian.
Nope.
But it's mostly vegetarian.
Yeah. And I think even, you know, I use a lot of chicken stock mm-hmm. and those sort of ingredients, but all of them can be really easily replaced for vegetable stock, or, you know, it's very easily adaptable if you're vegetarian or even vegan, although I'm a big fan of cheese, so I have to put that warning out. And I think it's funny, I talk about this in the book, but my younger daughter, when she was actually one of my editors of this book,
Rosie.
Yes, yeah, Rosie. Okay. She's proved to be a pretty amazing reader. So, and she was reading one of the last passes, and she was like, "Mom, I really think you should call this book Vegetables with Cheese." And I was like, "I don't know how well that's going to go over."
Actually, that could be, I mean, a very pared down, you know, honest title for a book that I'm sure a lot of kids would like, and grown-ups.
Yeah.
Or vegetables with fat.
Right, vegetables with fat. Vegetables with dairy.
Vegetables that just need a little some help.
Exactly. You know, I mean, it really comes down to the fat and the salt and the acid. So all those three things are really going to make anything sing if you know how to use them.
Yeah. So you said vegetables are having a moment. Is that for health and sustainability and, you know?
You know, I wish I could get down to the answer to that question. Mm-hmm. I mean, what do you think?
I hope it's not just a moment. But I think it's hopefully a greater, you know, awareness of vegetables tasting good.
Yeah,
you know,
that's like my hope, too.
Yeah.
And I think also, I think it has something to do with the fact that we also have a growing agriculture movement that involves farmers who are really excited to try new unproven varieties, which, mm-hmm. it takes a lot of courage for a farmer to plant something that's not proven.
Right.
Because every single little inch of real estate is money. Mm-hmm. So I think we have a lot of innovative farmers who are growing some incredible things and making those available to us, and we have to try them.
Yeah.
So that, I think that's really lending to that moment. And, you know, I think health is part of it, but I hope I kind of hope that's the passing piece of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like You know, when I eat something because it's healthy, it doesn't taste good to me. But when I eat something because it's pleasurable, then it's so good. Yeah, it's like
should we tell you that these recipes are not healthy?
Right, and then they're, yeah, it's funny like that I was raised a health food new age kid, so mm-hmm. maybe I just, you know, I had too many date nut bars or whatever right. But I just feel like when I focus on the nutrient mm-hmm. Element of food, it takes the pleasure out of it. Yeah. Out of it for me.
So I'm curious, like, while vegetables, you know, a lot of chefs are doing vegetable forward menus and, you know, they're doing, you know, we have access to amazing vegetables now, as you mentioned, mm. from farmers who are really, growing some interesting heirlooms and, varieties that you can get more and more and grocery stores and
yeah,
so forth.
Anywhere really.
But what about the new sort of crop of future foods that are, you know, also sort of telling people that you can eat less meat by eating these meat replacement things, mm. like a, you know, meatless burger that looks like a burger. And like that's a good way to reduce our meat consumption for health and sustainability.
Yeah. Yeah, it seems, you know, it's funny because I feel like that's happening at the same time as soy is losing its glow. So mm-hmm. these foods are now, like these meatless burgers are now...
You mean like tofu?
Yes, stuff, yeah. exactly. Mm-hmm. So I think there's always this race to figure out new protein sources.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really interested in kind of in these conversations around making the vegetable the center.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of adding the meat or the protein as the side. Right. Because I think that's a great way to eat.
And it seems like it is a great way to eat, but it needs a little bit of education.
Definitely.
Like, as you've learned.
Yeah, and it definitely goes beyond the cauliflower steak. I feel like a lot of times it kind of stops there. But
yeah.
And often it's about incorporating a couple of different dishes at the same time. And mm-hmm. And really learning how to use those fats in a way to make the vegetables super satisfying. So,
right.
But yeah, the future foods, it's an interesting, I mean, I think, you know, right now I feel like there's definitely a lot of motion towards going, you know, losing meat from our diet.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure where that's going to go.
Yeah. There's a lot of ways you could do that. But it seems like the most simple way is to make something that looks like meat.
Yeah.
Or, you know, that what you're used to, instead of having to kind of rewire your thinking around food.
Yeah.
Which hopefully isn't too hard.
I know. I've always maybe my new age health food upbringing, but I'm always resistant to the things that stand in the place of others.
Mm.
You know, mm-hmm. like I feel like I love tofu. Because I love tofu, like, and I love to like, I like to make fresh tofu, like the, you know, and I don't like to think about it instead of chicken because
right.
it's not chicken. So,
right.
but I do think there's some really interesting innovations happening. So I'm excited to try them
yeah.
as they come.
So no gimmicks in this book.
No.
You won't find that quote unquote steak.
Nope. No cauliflower steak.
No steak. However, you do have, I was curious about this one. Just to get a sense of Alana's brain, for the intro of Indian Spice Shepherd's Pie,
uh-huh.
You write in the head note for this recipe, "When I come into a bounty of rutabaga, shepherd's pie is the first thing I make."
Because don't we all always come into a bounty of rutabaga?
Actually, no. I do see rutabaga and I want to make something with it.
Right
so
now, there's...
Big and, yeah.
And in the grocery store, there's like piles yeah. of them right now. And they're
yeah.
cheap.
They're so cheap.
Yeah.
I
find rutabaga...
I never thought of shepherd's pie, though.
I find rutabaga to be really intense on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But when it's sort of mashed yeah. in and... it goes really, really great with those Indian flavors. I love that recipe. Yeah.
Yeah. So strong flavors are a good complement.
Yeah, exactly. And you're adding a little bit of the dairy and cream to sort of temper the bitterness. And because all those bitter vegetables, if you with the fat and the dairy, then that like the bitter turns to this silky deliciousness. Those are
right.
my favorite flavors of vegetables, like broccoli rabe and endive. And there's a magic that happens there when you add the right things.
Love it. And you're also decreasing you're adding more vegetables to an otherwise meaty dish.
Yes, which is a great way to do it too. Like if you're used to having tacos with ground beef, you know, and you're just like, normally you would have like 2 pounds of ground beef.
Right.
You could substitute 1.5 pounds of that with vegetables.
Right.
And it's like, you're still getting that meatiness, but then you might have like zucchini and carrot and onion and all sorts of things in there, and you're getting, and it, and there's more flavor.
Right. So you don't have to choose between the beef tacos and the veggie tacos and make combo.
Exactly. Yeah. Work the vegetables in. And that's a really great way to think about that random zucchini that's sitting in your fridge.
Yeah.
Or like, because so often vegetables, they, you know, you throw them in the compost or the trash because they get withery and sad. So the more dishes we can have where we can just like throw them all in that are more interesting than vegetable soup, which certainly have, has its place.
Right.
I think the better.
Or also you have a smaller amount of beef, but you have a bounty of rutabaga.
Exactly.
You
know, like, so
it goes hand in hand. But yeah, it just takes a little adjustment of thinking.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Let's explore more of those recipes after a quick little commercial interlude.
Take a sip from your chalice just and I bow my head to you. Cause I can't get myself with beer.
Today's program was brought to you by Wisconsin Cheese. What do you think of when you hear Wisconsin cheese? For me, I think cheese curds. Delicious, fresh and squeaky cheese curds. Or deep fried cheese curds. Cheese curds literally any way, anytime, any place. I think about Andy Hatch and Uplands Cheese, the Farmstead Cheese Company behind Pleasant Ridge Reserve. I think of delicious Stinky Limburger and its long storied history. I think of Dunbarton Blue, made by master cheesemaker Chris Raleigh. I think of Ross Grand Cru Sirchois, which was named 2016's World Championship Cheese, and Sartori's Black Pepper Bellavitano, the 2017 U.S. Championship Cheese. Wisconsin produces the world's best cheese, with lush grasslands and a glacial water supply that produce the very best milk. Fourth generation cheesemakers combine old world tradition with new ideas and the highest standards to make innovative cheeses that win more awards than any other state or country. To learn more, visit wisconsincheese.com.
All right. That was a nice little message from Wisconsin Cheese.
Wisconsin
I'm sure Alana
cheese.
Likes that. You're dreaming up recipes during
about
that commercial.
Cheese curds now.
Yeah. Vegetables with cheese. Continued. No, Eating from the Ground Up is the name of the book.
Actually.
And the blog from that you've been writing since how long?
2008, maybe.
Wow.
So 10 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Happy anniversary.
Thank you.
So I love how you demystify a lot of the shopping, and the terms that we now see around veggies. First of all, how would you recommend to somebody, like, where to get your vegetables?
You know, I think that it really changes depending on where you are and what and how you like to shop.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the good news is that in most places these days, there are a lot of options.
Mm-hmm.
There are farmers markets pretty much everywhere at this point, at least once a week, close-ish to most communities. So that's always a good way to go. You know, their vegetables are fresher. The money's going right to the farmer. It can be a fun social experience. So, you know, there's a lot of good things about shopping at the market. But then we have all sorts. We have grocery stores that are more and more having more focus on their produce departments. Their you know, focus on fresh is really increasing in grocery stores. And then, you know, also like international markets are like Asian markets, Indian markets, like those are really great places to get vegetables and
yeah.
often vegetables you can't find anywhere else
mm-hmm.
or really interesting herbs. And I live in the country up in Massachusetts, and we don't really have that many resources, but I'll drive to Albany or to Hartford and like go to the Asian market
to get my greens.
Yeah. So that's a really great thing to do too. And then we have CSAs. Which I feel like, CSAs are really great for a lot of families or for individuals who are excited about having to deal with the things that they get and learning about vegetables that way. Like, you can't choose necessarily. So I know I love cooking through a CSA box myself.
Right. And your book is very CSA friendly because there's this section in the back that is organized by ingredient or
yes.
vegetable.
Yeah.
and then the recipes that go for those ones.
Yeah, I really, you know, my hope for this book is sort of that it can hang out on the counter and that whenever there's a vegetable you need to deal with, you can open it up and find a recipe that'll sound good to you. So that was sort of the goal for this whole volume.
And there's a lot for radishes, of course.
I know, it's like, it's funny, you know, any book goes through such a process. And, you know, I always have twice as many recipes as end up in a book.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. But when so finally, you know, when it all comes down to it, you sort of look through and it's like, oh, huh, this is where we ended up. And mm-hmm. I was like, I really like radishes and I really like cabbage.
Yeah, cabbage is another one you have a lot of fun recipes for.
I love cabbage.
It's
so good.
And it's cheap.
So cheap. It's available all year round. It's delicious even in the winter. And you can do so many different things to it.
I love that it never goes bad, too, in the fridge.
I know. You can cut it in half and throw the half in the fridge, and, like, you mm-hmm. have another 2 months before it even looks like it's aged. It's great.
You can make heaps of slaw, but I love your suggestion of using them instead of onions to mm-hmm. caramelize slowly.
That soup is so good. Yeah. Caramelized cabbage soup.
Caramelized cabbage soup with, like, the French onion.
Yeah, cheese. Same treatment. Cheese. Right.
And the stale bread.
I see the theme. Yeah, and just caramelized cabbage, even before you turn it into soup, is really great. It's great on Reubens and, you know, any sort of situation where that kind of cabbage gets so sweet, mm-hmm. like an onion when you caramelize it. So that
and
just crunchy, delicious.
Just as quick, too.
Yeah, yeah.
It breaks down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh,
so good.
It's a good trick.
Yeah.
Okay, so where was I? you have an interesting recipe here for cauliflower. And I was trying to figure out what was going on. It's called cauliflower hot wings with blue cheese dressing.
Oh, yeah.
That is not a wing, right?
No. Okay. And so I guess I'm going against my own my own rule of not disguising one thing as another. But, you know, that actually, that came out of a really funny dish that I once ate that I was at a party. And it was a very sort of kind of hip. We all sat on the floor, 20 of us, like eating lots of, you know,
I want to go to these parties.
It was lovely, okay. You know, right. And sort of, and everything was sort of very Ottolenghi focused and most everything was gluten-free and vegan and delicious, like lots of good cooks. And we're all sitting there and people are just devouring this amazing, like crunchy red cauliflower and trying to figure out what's in it. And is it harissa? Is it this? Is it like, like it was the best thing. And this guy pipes up in the corner and he's like, no, I fried it with white flour and Frank's hot sauce. And everyone sort of was like, ooh, and I
white flour. I know.
It was really funny. I obviously kept eating it, but I had to find a way to recreate it because it was so good. It's like this really, you know, cauliflower gets all creamy and meaty when you fry it in that way.
It stands up to the frying too.
Really stands up. And it's also really nice. I'm not a big wing fan. Mm-hmm. And my husband really loves wings.
I do too.
You're like, yeah, I mean, you're either there or you're not. But yeah. I don't like I'm not big into the bones of wings. But I love the flavors. Mm-hmm. So I like to have cauliflower hot wings along with wings when we're
I can see how
thing.
The shape would look very similar too. When you have that head, it looks like the drumette, I'm sure.
Totally.
When you coat it and fry it and you could fool somebody. Maybe.
Yeah, so good.
That's a fun one. You also have, you mentioned that you can't eat eggplant.
Yeah, I've never been able to eat eggplant, but I have such a crush on it. I really wish that I could.
I love that you have a crush on eggplant.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah.
And people love it, mm-hmm. but my grandmother couldn't eat it. I can't eat it. My husband can't eat it either. So, like, I don't know what it is.
But can't, meaning what
like
happens?
Like, horrible stomachache.
Oh.
Yeah. So okay. I can't do it.
Well, thanks for providing recipes for it
anyway. Yeah, I had to. Yeah. My good friend, who is the recipe tester for this book, she contributed that recipe because I was like, please. And I've heard a few complaints that I don't have enough eggplant recipes in this book, but I hope people will forgive me for just
that's very hospitable
one.
Of you. Yeah. I appreciate that. So, but this is really interesting, though, the eggplant dengaku.
Yeah.
It's a grilled eggplant with some miso.
Yeah, it's like a Japanese flavors, miso and ginger. And it uses those really beautiful little Asian eggplants.
Oh, the fairy. Oh,
the fairy the ones one. Will work okay. too, but mm-hmm. really those beautiful sort of, they look like eels or something.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the summer, they're really easy to find. And they're nice because I feel like big, if I were to be eating eggplant, big eggplants are such a, it's a real commitment.
Yeah.
Whereas these little beautiful, you know, you can just like eat one of those for dinner.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. Any color will do too, yes. I'm sure. But yeah, that sounds like a really, I didn't know that name for it, but it sounds like a super, all these recipes are super simple.
Really simple.
And I love how you have this section in the front that is like barely a recipe. Right. It's just like you know, caramelized Hakurai turnips. Mm-hmm. Pieces of a meal, perhaps?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And really preparations. Mm-hmm. And part of me, you know, it's like in a way that was really, that chapter is, it's the longest chapter and it's the heart of the book. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, how to, you know, the sort of the right balance of tamari and olive oil on broccoli to make it really, really delicious. How long does it need to steam mm-hmm. for? And yeah, like how to pan fry Brussels sprouts.
Right. That's a good staple.
Because I feel, like I said, it was like, it's like, you know, people know how to do what they know.
Right.
And then they don't know how to do the other things. So mm-hmm. I wanted to provide a resource so that they could know how to do all the things.
I love it. Like, you know, flipping through it, I'm like, yeah, that's something like I make, you know, I make something like that. Yeah, I like that. And then I'll see something that's like, what? I never thought to do that.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm surprising you.
Yeah. Particularly the radish compound butter.
You've never done that?
Well, I mean, I've eaten the radishes dipped in the butter.
I'm so excited for you to try that.
I know.
I want you to tell me when you do so that I can hear.
That's an amazing idea. You kind of like took that idea and subverted it.
Oh, it's so good because you just chop up the radishes really small and you add good salt and a little bit of lemon. You could add a little bit of herbs if you want, but like the radishes, when they sit in the butter, it all kind of infuses the butter. And then you can just spread that butter really thick on bread or whatever. And it's the crunch. And like, it's a whole other experience than just radishes with butter, which is a delicious thing. But it really, it's like integrates it into this beautiful product.
That sounds like an amazing way to integrate because I'm always trying to like pile more butter on that radish piece, which is, you know, wet, so it's falling off.
I know, and it slides off, which is always a really big problem
like,
with
back
that.
Get on there, butter.
Yeah.
And then I'm like eating accidentally just a piece of butter and it falls.
And then you need to go again.
So I mix it all together into a compote spread. I didn't think that.
It's great.
I love how you mentioned you can have some crunchy, flaky salt that you mix in there that like gives you more texture.
Yeah. And a little lemon zest if you want. I mean, there's really, once you start, you can just keep adding things.
Keep adding things.
So good.
You have a little helpful GMO breakdown here.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about how, you know, we should look at labels these days about organic or local GMO?
Well, it's hard, isn't it? It's like, I feel like every day there's another label.
Mm-hmm.
So my real focus is just in helping people to understand what those labels mean.
Mm-hmm.
I think depending on our food budget or where we are or how we cook, you know, it's hard to say that there's a hard and fast rule for what you should decide at the grocery store. Like your priorities might be local and mine might be organic and someone else's might just be like, I need vegetables, like whatever I can afford and get. So it's like, I feel like we get into trouble when we say, you know, all those 10 things you should never buy or this or that, because we're all trying to do our best.
Uh-huh. So I think labels change.
May change. Yeah. So I think the best thing we can do is stay educated about what they mean and what does organic certification really mean? And what does that non-GMO butterfly stand for? And what's the conversation behind it? And then to sort of learn more about it and then make an informed decision and say, okay, I'm going to prioritize this over this. But I just really urge people to just go easy on themselves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, if there are things that are important to you, and there should be, then find ways to follow through. But it's, sometimes it's easy to feel shouted at in this current food climate, and I'm not into that.
Well, what scares me a little bit is that you know, with all the clamor about GMO and maybe other legit, you know, pesticide issues and so forth, is that people might be scared away from eating more vegetables.
Yes, exactly.
Which is, not the best idea for a lot of reasons, but you can see how, you know, all digging into these things and looking into labels would be a little bit scary.
It can be really overwhelming. I try to break it down and sort of in a nice sort of overview of what you might see at the grocery store. Okay. And but I do think it's going to become a more complicated landscape. So the best way that we can sort of arm ourselves against that is to just like take a breath and just be like, all right, I'm going to do my best.
Yeah. Do your best. Just put cheese on it.
Yeah. Wisconsin cheese even. All
right. This is a really kid-friendly book too.
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, you have kids, so you know that it's kid-tested.
Yes. Yeah. And they really helped with this one because these are the recipes that we eat. And my kids are now teenagers, but, you know, these recipes have been building over the last decade. And they've been, you know, I really rely on them because they each have really different flavor palettes.
Oh, okay.
So I get really different feedback from them, which is great.
What are their favorites?
You know, I'd say my younger daughter, Rosie, she's a cheesy broccoli.
Okay. Cheesy broccoli.
Yeah. Which is really
cauliflower just, cheesy.
Yeah.
Kind of. Okay.
Cheesy broccoli is in the first chapter, and it's this nice, simple, you just steam the broccoli, put cheddar cheese on it and put it in the oven. It's like a sort of special yummy. It's almost like broccoli nachos. And then my older daughter, you know, she loves mushrooms and we don't, my husband and my younger daughter are not mushroom fans. So I try to like sneak mushrooms in to please my older daughter, and there's a soup in there that's a shiitake barley soup, which is a really nice sort of like wintry, nurturing miso based barley soup where you make a bit of stock with the mushroom stems and the leek stems, which is really so satisfying.
Use all that leek. Yeah. Goodness.
And that's a recipe that she really loves a lot. But yeah, the mushrooms are in there for her, for sure.
Yeah. I love that there's such a variety and such a plentiful array of vegetables.
Try throughout. To get them all in there.
Yeah. So I hope everyone gets their hands on this book. It looks like that's about all the time we have for today.
Oh.
But it'll be very handy for your CSA share or what's it? I don't know. Farmer's market flings.
Or your grocery store shop.
Definitely. So thank you so much for joining us again, Alana.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I love coming here. So
we love having you on. And check out Alana's blog, Eating from the Ground Up. This new book is going to be such a practical, good one. Good idea for a present for mothers, too, I think.
Yeah, I think they'd appreciate it.
Mother's Day coming up.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's about all the time we have. Thanks, everyone else at Heritage. We'll see you next week on Eat Your Words.
I like the way you do. Whoa, the way you took it so slow.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.